Sorry, 1 Samuel chapter 25, which is on page 459 in the Pew Bibles. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him at his home in Ramah. Then David moved down into the desert of Maon. A certain man in Maon who had property there at Carmel was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in Carmel. His name was Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman, but her husband, a Calebite, was surly and mean in his dealings. While David was in the desert, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep, so he sent 10 young men and said to them, "Go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, 'Long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not mistreat them, and the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants and they will tell you. Therefore, be favourable toward my young men, since we come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them." When David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message, "In David's name." Then they waited. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where?" David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word. David said to his men, "Put on your swords." So they put on their swords and David put on his. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the supplies. One of the servants told Nabal's wife Abigail, "David sent messengers from the desert to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us, and the whole time we were out in the fields near them, nothing was missing. Night and day they were a wall around us all the time we were herding our sheep near them. Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him." Abigail lost no time. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seers of roasted grapes of raisins and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told her servants, "Go on ahead and I'll follow you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. As she came riding her donkey into a mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending toward her, and she met them. David had just said, "It's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the desert, so that nothing of his was missing. He has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, or if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him." When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed down before David with her face to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "My Lord, let the blame be on me alone. Please let your servant speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. May my Lord pay no attention to that wicked man Nabal. He is just like his name. His name is Fool, and folly goes with him. But as for me, your servant, I did not see the men my master sent. Now since the Lord has kept you, my master, from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, may your enemies and all who intend to harm my master be like Nabal. And let this gift, which your servant has brought to my master, be given to the men who follow you. Please forgive your servant's offence for the Lord, for the Lord will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my master, because he fights the Lord's battles. Let no wrongdoing be found in you as long as you live. Even though someone is pursuing you to take your life, the life of my master will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling, when the Lord has every good thing heaped concerning him and has appointed him leader over Israel. My master will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or of having avenged himself. And when the Lord has brought my master success, remember your servant. David said to Abigail, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak." Then David accepted from her hand what she had brought him and said, "Go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your request." When Abigail went to Nabal, he was in the house, holding a banquet like that of a king. He was in high spirits and very drunk, so she told him nothing until daybreak. Then in the morning, when Nabal was sober, his wife told him all these things, and his heart failed him and he became like a stone. About 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal and he died. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Praise be to the Lord, who has upheld my cause against Nabal for treating me with contempt. He has kept his servant from doing wrong and has brought Nabal's wrongdoing down on his own head." Then David sent word to Abigail, asking her to become his wife. His servants went to Carmel and said to Abigail, "David has sent us to you to take you to become his wife." She bowed down with her face to the ground and said, "Here is your maidservant, ready to serve you and wash the feet of my master's servants." Abigail quickly got on a donkey and, attended by her 5 maids, went with David's messengers and became his wife. David had also married Ahinoam of Jezreel, and they both were his wives. But Saul had given his daughter Michal, David's wife, to Paltiel, son of Latish, who was from Galim. May God add his blessing to that reading.
Can you think of a man who is really hard to like? Someone who's always complaining, always grumbling about something, always blaming others, never having a good word to say about anyone or anything, a real grouch, and making everyone else miserable as well. Maybe you can think of somebody like that, or maybe you've read about someone like that. They're bad news. And what's surprising is that sometimes these men are married to women who are just the opposite. Delightful ladies who always have a smile on their faces and who are always willing to help. Nothing ever seems too much trouble for them. They even turn the criticism directed to them into something positive. And you wonder how they ever got mixed up with that guy who seems to have no attractive features at all. Well, that's the sort of situation we have in 1 Samuel chapter 25. Nabal is that sort of man, and Abigail is that sort of wife. And they become part of the Bible story because of their dealings with David when he was escaping from Saul. But chapter 25 begins with an even more significant event. It begins with the death of Samuel. Now, Samuel was one of the great men of the Bible, up there with Moses and Abraham. Samuel was a prophet, but also a priest and a judge and a kingmaker. Samuel lived in the time when the judges ended and the kings began. He was the last and greatest of the judges, and he anointed the first kings. He was born in a time when Israel didn't have a strong leader, at a time when many of them worshipped the gods of the Canaanites. Eli was the priest at that time, as well as Israel's leader, but he didn't seem to give any strong leadership, and the nation was heading away from God and being defeated by their enemies, particularly the Philistines. After Eli died, Samuel took control. He told the Israelites to get rid of their foreign gods and commit themselves wholly to God and serve him only. And they did. They fasted and confessed their sins, and God rescued them from the Philistines. And it's all in 1 Samuel chapter 7, if you'd like to read it. Samuel was called by God to a special task, and he did that task well. What he did pointed to what Christ was to do so much more effectively over 1,000 years later. Samuel's great task was twofold. It was to teach the people about God, and secondly, to bring God's people back into a proper relationship with God. Christ also came to teach us about God. In fact, to show us what God is like. And secondly, he also came to bring us back into a personal relationship with God the Father through his death on the cross. When Samuel was old and his sons didn't walk in his ways, the Israelites asked for a king like the other nations had. And God gave them a king, King Saul, who Samuel anointed. But Saul was a disappointment, because he actually became like a king that the other nations had, and not a king under God. So Samuel was asked to anoint David, a man after God's own heart, which he did. But it was years before David became king, some very difficult years for David. When Samuel died, David lost one of his greatest supporters and someone who was highly respected by the Jewish nation. So he was now even more at the mercy of King Saul. In verses 1 to 3, we're told that all the people mourned for Samuel, and that then David moved from the mountainous region of Judea to the desert of Maon and the district of Carmel. And it's then that we introduce to Nabal and Abigail. Now Maon may have been a desert, but Carmel certainly wasn't. Carmel means garden land, and it and the plain of Sharon on the Mediterranean coast were renowned in Israel for their fertile and productive land. So Nabal, with all his livestock, would have been using a large chunk of Israel's best grazing land. In Bible times, a person's wealth was often gauged by the number of livestock that they had. And Nabal had a lot. 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep. We're also told that Nabal was a Calebite, a descendant of Caleb. You remember Caleb? He was the other spy who urged the Israelites to trust God and go in and conquer and control the land of Canaan. Caleb and Joshua were the only men over 30 who went into the promised land of Canaan. Caleb was also the spokesman for the tribe of Judah when the land was divided up. So in a land where ancestry and wealth meant so much, Nabal would have been highly regarded. It seems he had everything going for him, but he wasn't grateful for any of it. He was surly and mean. And my dictionary says that surly means rude, unsociable, and bad-tempered. Nabal wasn't a nice man at all. And it was shearing time, the time of the year when graziers reap the rewards for their year's work, a time of rejoicing when everyone celebrates the bountiful harvest, a time of the year when wealthy graziers, like Nabal, can afford to be particularly generous. Meanwhile, David and his 600 men needed to be fed. We're told in verse 7 and 8 that their presence had meant that nobody, including the Philistines, had been game to steal any of Nabal's livestock. And it was an opportune time for Nabal to reward David for his protection and to encourage him to stay on so that the protection would continue. So David sent men to remind Nabal of this and to ask Nabal politely for a reasonable reward for his services. So what happened? Well, Nabal isn't very polite at all. And in verses 10 and 11, he suggests that he doesn't know about David's prowess as a warrior or his being anointed as Israel's future king, and accuses him of deserting his master, King Saul. He says David's a nobody and doesn't deserve any help to feed his men, who he suggests are of doubtful character. Look at what he says in verses 10 and 11. Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where? Not a very wise reply. David's men go back and report everything Nabal had said to David. Naturally, David doesn't appreciate the insults, and he's not a happy man. In fact, it appears that in verse 13, he actually loses his temper, because he says to his men, "Put on your swords." And taking 400 of his men, prepared and ready for battle, he sets off to have it out with Nabal, to teach him a lesson and to punish him for his lack of hospitality. But is what David is doing a reasonable reaction? Does David have the right to kill every male belonging to Nabal, which is what he said he intended to do in verse 22? Simply because his pride is hurt. For a start, it's hardly a fair fight. David's small army that he'd moulded into a lethal fighting force against Nabal and his shepherds. But even if it was a fair fight, how can David possibly justify what he's about to do? It's interesting, isn't it, what David is prepared to do to Nabal and what he isn't prepared to do to Saul. Well, fortunately, one of the servants tells Abigail in verses 14 to 17, and they tell her that Nabal had hurled insults at David's messengers, despite the fact that David's men had been like a wall around Nabal's sheep and shepherds night and day, all the time the sheep were being herded near them. And when Abigail has the situation explained to her, she moves quickly to prevent a slaughter. Abigail to the rescue. It probably wasn't the first time she'd sorted things out after Nabal had shot off his mouth. And she did what Nabal should have done in the first place and gave David the food. The list of food in verse 18, appears to be a lot. 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs. But if you think about it, it wasn't much. It wouldn't go far with 600 men. As Abigail and her servants take all the food to give to David, their timing is excellent. As they enter a ravine, in verse 20, they meet David and his men coming down the sides of the ravine on their way to deal with Nabal. In verses 21 and 22, we see David talking to himself about what he's going to do, perhaps muttering to himself, perhaps talking to his troops, perhaps trying to justify what he's about to do. In verses 23 to 25, Abigail shows her respect for David and tells him that she's willing to take the blame for the situation, even though it was brought on by her husband, who she tells him is a fool, which is what his name means. And even though she only knew about it because one of her servants had told her. Abigail then says in verse 26 that she believes that God has sent her to prevent David from doing, on the spur of the moment, what he might regret later. And her wish for David is that all who wish him harm will receive the punishment that he was going to give to Nabal. In verses 28 to 30, Abigail says she knows that God has chosen David and his descendants to be kings of Israel. And even now that he is a fugitive from Saul, God is using David to fight his battles against the evil and godless nations on the borders of Israel. And you'll remember we have an example of that back in chapter 10:23, when David saves the city of Keilah from the Philistines. And Abigail says she knows that God is keeping David safe during all this and giving him victory in the battles. Abigail doesn't plead for Nabal's life, but appeals to David's good sense, so that in future he won't have to remember with regret this time when he allowed his anger. To prompt him to do something he would later realise was an overreaction. The only other thing that Abigail asks of David is that he'll remember her when he becomes king. We read in verses 32 to 34 that David is impressed and praises God for sending Abigail. He has the wisdom to know that what she says is true, and he's grateful. Well, Abigail arrives home to find Nabal very drunk. In verse 36, holding a banquet fit for a king, when he wasn't prepared to give David and his men food for a basic meal. In the morning, in verses 37 and 38, when Nabal is sobered up, Abigail tells him what she's done. He appears to have a stroke or a heart attack that paralyzes him, and then 10 days later, presumably has another one and dies. When David hears about Nabal, in verse 39, he's delighted and grateful that God preserved him from doing things his way, when God had it all worked out anyway, so that Nabal receives his just rewards. And David will, we notice, waste no time in asking Abigail to be his wife, and Abigail agrees. Abigail's humility and sacrificial attitude are shown clearly in her willingness to leave the life of luxury that she'd shared with Nabal to begin a new life wandering around the wilderness, escaping from Saul. Although she did take her five maids, in verse 32, and presumably a few other things as well. But you notice she also had to share David with Ahinoam, the wife he already had. As for David, we see God continuing to care for him. Nabal tried to prevent him from getting the food that he needed to live on. And in verse 44, we are told Saul gave his wife Michal to another man. But God not only supplies David with the food he requires, but he also provides him with a much wiser and more godly wife than Michal. Isn't God marvellous? He continually provides us with the things that are good for us. In Romans 8:28, we read, "We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose." God provided the Israelites with Samuel, a godly leader, when they needed a strong leader to bring them back to God. A leader who was able to bring the tribes together as a nation when it was time to give them a king. When King Saul decided not to do things his way rather than the way God had told him, God provided another king, David, a man after God's own heart. But David spent many years in the wilderness before he took over from Saul, many difficult years. And even though these years were difficult, God cared for David and provided for him. David made mistakes, but when he recognised his sin, he was willing to repent. In the case of his angry reaction when Nabal treated him with contempt, he thanks God in verse 29 for preventing him from doing what he now recognised was wrong. What is good for us isn't always what we want. But like Samuel and David, we need to trust God and to know that he knows what's best and that he's working for our good if we love him and are called by him. Even though the world denies it, what everyone needs most is forgiveness from sin, so that we can come back to God and build a relationship with him. And the good news is that God has provided for that as well, at great cost, through Christ's death on the cross. Praise be to Almighty God. Let us pray.